Ben Fagan here with another episode of Career Cash, the podcast. And on this episode, I sit down with FIBA Foundation Senior Manager, TJ Bullock. On the episode, TJ and I talk about making a global impact through the game of basketball, the significance of proper preparation, and the importance of working from a place of love. It's an awesome conversation. Let's get to it. I am back here with another episode. We're going global here, which is very exciting for me. TJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ben. Really appreciate the invitation. Again, huge congratulations to you for the initiative, all that you're doing for the Lynn community. And it's truly an honor for me to be part of the show.
No, absolutely. I appreciate that. So like I said, we're global today. So can you let the people know where you're calling in from?
So I'm calling in from a city called Nyon, Switzerland. It's about 15 minutes from Geneva, Switzerland, which is one of the biggest cities in Switzerland and probably a city that people are more accustomed to.
Very nice. Very nice. So we were playing a little bit of, you know, the time difference thing, but, you know, like I mentioned to you, my brother's living over in Spain. So I'm a vet with when it comes to playing.
So you're
the,
used to it. You're
juggling.
Good to go. Yeah. But sometimes, you know, I get messages, calls. 2-3 a.m. And then like where I'm asleep.
Exactly. Yeah.
but we're 6 hours ahead of you guys on the East Coast, 9 hours ahead of the people over there on the West Coast.
Okay. So you're a pro with the time conversions there too. So can you, I always like to start with getting a little bit of context for everybody listening about what you do on a day-to-day basis. Cause I know you got a lot going on. So can you kind of, catch us up to speed with what you do on a general scale on a day-to-day basis? And we'll dive a little bit more in depth into that kind of stuff, how you got there and then where you're going.
For sure. So first of all, day-to-day before globe, like what I do in the organization. First,
yeah. Correct. Yep.
Cool. No problem. Day-to-day, I'm a family man now, you know, wife, little baby, only 9 months old. So that's a huge part of the day-to-day. So trying to help out as much as I can early in the morning. I'm quite of an early bird. I try to get to the office around 7:30, 7:45. And the majority of the office gets there at about 9. So I like to get there a little bit earlier before everyone gets there to be able to answer any emails or WhatsApps that I received over the night, especially the most urgent ones. So that's normally the first thing that I do. Then when everyone comes, so it's checking in with my team. My days are quite different, you know, and it's one of the things that I love most about my job, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But I normally have 1 to 2 meetings in the morning. Those could be internally, so that could be in person, or a lot of times it's a Zoom or a Teams call with someone that is normally in a different time zone. So if it's a call early in the morning, a lot of times it's with someone in Southeast Asia or Oceania. Then we're lucky to have a cafeteria in the office, so going up to lunch at about 12:30, up there for about 30 to 45 minutes. And then, you know, continuing in the afternoon, amidst all the meetings, trying to stay up to date with emails, especially the most urgent ones. I normally receive about 100 emails a day, you know, but it's not all ones that you have to respond. A lot of times you're in copy of emails, so you just have to be aware of what's going on. And then when we get towards the end of the day, a lot of times then it's calls with the Americas. So that might be people in the USA, but Central America, South America, and it could be in English, French, or Spanish, depending on who I'm speaking with at that time. So it's very much going in different directions. It obviously depends on what is currently going on, if we have an event upcoming, or if it's more the debrief period, or just planning on what's to come in the next year, or planning our projects, but at the same time, managing the team that I have in-house and having one-to-ones with them as we move along as well. So it can really go in different directions, Ben.
So you got obviously, as you mentioned, you know, it's going in a million different directions. You're talking about three languages, you know, a handful of different time zones, a lot of different projects, emails coming in, going out. So you have all these kind of things, and the day to day, you know, varies, you know, from each day. So is that something that, like, how do you manage that to, you know, keep yourself going? Is that something that energizes you, the variety of it? You know, what gets you going about kind of the work layout in that fashion?
For sure. For me, variety is a big part of what I do, and it's a big part of what I love in the job that I do. Each one has their own interests, and each one has their own why, as I like to call it. And some people like consistency and to do the same thing every day or every week, and that allows them to improve. And I'm sure if I had to do that, I would find a way to do that as well. But in my current role, in my current job, the variety helps me tremendously to always have a new challenge. And even when I'm working on one challenge, another one is happening at the same time. And, you know, it makes me be very organized, manage my time well, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
So in your specific role, what are you in charge of? What are people going to TJ to look into you to help organize, help get done? So in your specific role, what are the things that you're in charge of within the organization?
Of course. So I'm in charge of the FIBA Foundation. So maybe just quick background first on FIBA. So FIBA mm-hmm. is the international governing body of basketball. We have 212 member federations, one that a lot of, you know, people at Lynn might know is USA Basketball, but each country has their equivalents. So each country has their governing body of basketball. That could be Canada Basketball, El Salvador Basketball, Swiss Basketball, French Basketball. There's 212 of those, and we empower them. You know, so the main role of FIBA is to govern the sport of basketball globally. It's to organize international competitions. That could be the Olympics, that could be the Basketball World Cup, continental championships such as AmeriCup, AfroBasket, EuroBasket, but also to develop the sport of basketball, and not just on a elite level, but also on a grassroots level as well, bringing more kids into the sports. So that's just an overarching message on what is FIBA. And then now, you know, adjacent to that, we have the foundation, which is legally a separate entity, but it's a department of FIBA at the headquarters. And I'm in charge of that department, which, one, we own the headquarters. So we are in charge of the facility maintenance of the building. So I have a colleague that is in charge of that. So I'm managing that aspect. We are also the cultural and legacy arm of FIBA. So everything to do with the history of our sports, I have a colleague that's in charge of that. We have a museum within the headquarters that we manage. And we also have the FIBA Hall of Fame that we manage, very similar to the Naismith Hall of Fame, but ours is much more geared towards international basketball and players and coaches who have done a great job with their national team and helping to develop the game in their respective country. And then lastly, we're also the social arm of FIBA. So that is all of our basketball for good projects, is what we call them. And I have a colleague that is in charge of that aspect as well. So that's more linked to what I was talking about, the grassroots side of the game, but never just the basketball components. There's always a social component that we add to it, and that is that for good. So using the power of basketball to create meaningful change around the world.
You touched on the grassroots a couple of times. That's something that I think is interesting, because before we started recording, you mentioned do we got a bee in sight? Is there a bumblebee around?
We have a bee. Okay. You knew about it, man. Okay.
I saw the eyes.
But I'm yes. playing it cool. I'm playing
you are
it
you
cool.
are. So for everyone just listening in, before we jumped on, there was a bee swarming around where TJ's at. So we're managing it. He's a champion. You know, dodging bees. Ducking and diving. So, but you were talking about
grassroots. You see, I was ducking, but I was
you're listening
two things at the same time.
This guy can do it all. It's unbelievable. So talking about grassroots, and before we started recording, you mentioned that, you know, you, you, there what you do, there's a lot that goes on. Cause it's not like you mentioned, it's not traveling just from, you know, Miami to Boston, you know, going to the same place. You might be in this country, that country, and the different countries are all across the globe. And you're trying to grow the game within all these different cultures. So what are some of the challenges that come along with growing the game from that grassroots level, like you mentioned?
It's not one size fits all. You know, so we can have a strategy, we can have a structure, we can have a curriculum and an action plan, SMART goals. And, you know, obviously you want to stay going in some sort of the same direction, but sometimes the majority of that goes out the window, you know, because, you know, one day I can be working with Guatemala and their federation about, okay, how are we going to add more 5, 6, 7 year olds to play more basketball in the country? But you have to take into account what's going on in Guatemala. And that goes beyond just the sports. It also goes on what's going on in the country. What is the language spoken? Do they play basketball in schools or do they play basketball in clubs? What is the time there compared to what it is where I am? Then I might be working with Papua New Guinea or Fiji. And it's a totally different set of rules that they play by. And on top of that, the people who I'm working with and who are in charge of developing the game in those countries, they're doing this off pure passion. You know, out of the 212 member federation that I talked about, I would say 60% have very little staff. And what I mean by that is those people have their own job that pays their bills, or maybe two jobs that pays their bills. Those one or two jobs does not consist of basketball. So everything they're doing is on a voluntary basis. So them answering my emails or WhatsApps or whatever it might be is on the little time that they can find amidst their respective schedules. And I cannot get upset at that. I can only commend that and respect that and find ways to try to assist them, to empower them with everything that they are trying to do. So that's just a few of the challenges that we find. But we always, you know, work together, understand the local and cultural context, trying to find a solution, trying to create more change through the game of basketball.
Now, has there been anything that's surprised you, really taken you back, that you can kind of think of when you've been working with one of the countries, you know, whatever country it might be or whatever federation it might have been? I know that's putting you on the spot right there.
So Papua New Guinea. Mm-hmm. It's a country in the Pacific Islands. They have 700 languages. Say that again. They have 700 languages in one country. Right. You know, because they were talking, there's different islands. And, you know, I was like, oh, well, why don't you, you know, collaborate more with them? Or why don't you invite them to the workshop that you're doing, you know, so that everyone learns at the same time? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, no, they speak a different language. Oh, what do you mean they speak it? Oh, yeah, we have 700 languages. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's going to make things a little bit more complicated. You know, so that's just one example, but a concrete example of things that we sometimes take for granted, but that is so different when you're working with a different culture, a different country. And you have to respect that. You have to learn about it. You have to take a step back and just truly educate yourself and go back to the drawing board and try to find a solution that is specific to that country or city that you're trying to work in.
Yeah, and that kind of brought up another thing that popped in my head when you were talking earlier about, you know, some federations, some countries that play, you know, by varying rules. And I know there's, you know, a world of, you know, talk around, you know, when like the U.S. goes overseas and plays in the FIBA tournaments and playing internationally. And, you know, one of my friends and old coworkers played, she's from the U.K., but played on the women's basketball team at Lynn, talked about how different it is playing back at home in the U.K. versus playing in the United States and stuff like that. So how do you go about
Danny?
Yeah, shout out Danny. There you go. You know, Danny. Danny Lotzi, you know, she's a loyal listener of the show. But when it comes to that, you're trying to spread this game. So how do you balance spreading the game and, you know, just the general standard of the rules, but embracing that culture? Because I think that's what, you know, makes what you do with FIBA so unique, is it draws from you know, over 200 different types of basketball, different cultures in the little intricacies. So how do you balance bringing the culture in, but still putting, you know, a consistent product on the court, or, you know, consistent set of rules or guidelines, if that makes sense?
For sure. I think so. I'll put a little history on you here.
Okay. Yeah.
You
yeah.
Know,
go for it.
So basketball was created in 1891 in Massachusetts, and FIBA was created in 1932. One of the main reasons why FIBA was created was because since the creation of basketball, the YMCA was a huge part of the globalization of the sport of basketball, which was very positive. But one of the things that came with that is that people started playing their own versions of the game, and it was getting a little bit too chaotic. Mm-hmm. And that's why there was a need for FIBA, the governing body of basketball, to be created. And that's why, out of the three objectives that I told you of our institution, the first one was created to govern the sport of basketball and to put forth a set of rules. You know, I think it's important, like you said, to remain open. But when you play a competition, everyone has to play by the same set of rules. And the rules that we set is for our competitions, which again is international competitions. You know, so that's when, for an example, Team USA coming to the Olympics or coming to the World Cup that we just organized, that is played by the FIBA set of rules. But in my responsibilities, you know, in terms of foundation, in terms of basketball for good projects at that grassroots level, I think that's where there is a little bit more wiggle room and for us to better understand what is going on locally, what is going on culturally, and, you know, let them mend that a little bit at the younger age to try to make sure that we are lowering as many barriers as possible. Because at the end of the day, from our perspective, the foundation perspective, we're trying to add as many new people into the sport as possible. And that's not possible if you have barriers all over, you know. So there is that playful collaboration that we have to just figure out the best way forward.
So it's really so much at the grassroots level. It's the big thing is instilling that love for the game, you know. Almost, is that would you say a fair assessment of the number one priority there?
100%. You know, creating a love for the game, what we like to call it, is creating lifelong citizens of the game. You know, at 5-6 years old, you should not be trying to create the next LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, great. You know, right. But if you're trying to do that at 5-6 years old, maybe that one child out of a million might become LeBron. But what about the other 999,999?
Right.
You know, the grand majority of those are going to not only stop basketball, they're going to stop sports because it's not fun. If the only thing that they're trying to do at that age is solely competing, I'm not saying competition should be a part of it, but if it's solely about competing, if it's solely about the best players on the court at that age, that's not the purpose of sports at that age, you know, and you're not creating a fun and inclusive environment that hopefully these kids, whether they become a coach, a referee, an administrator, a CEO of whatever company, we want their first touch, their first connection with sport, first and foremost, and the sport of basketball to be something positive, to be something joyful, to remember it with love. And no matter what they do in the future, they'll remember that and they'll invest back into the sport. So that's enlarging the community of the sport on a global level.
No, I really like that. And because coming from baseball background, growing up in it, and I know, you know, I think just it's in sports, youth sports specifically, it's becoming so much more specialized at such an early age. And I know baseball being in South Florida, you can play all year long and all these things. And it's like, all right, you're a baseball player, don't play other sports. And some of my best teammates in terms of their athleticism grew up playing every sport there was known to man. And so I wonder, is that specialization that you do see, I can only speak for the United States here, you know, where you're getting in with AAU, you're playing tournament after tournament, everything like that. I know on the baseball level, how crazy it is. I hear stories about the basketball level. Is that also seen as frequently, you know, on the international level? And I know, I'm sure it varies country by country, but do you see that same specialization from that early age, or is it a little different?
It's a great question, and I hate to be so neutral in this answer, but it really depends. And I hate to answer that way. But a lot of times it's even worse than the US. You know, one of the things that I love about the US, and as you just said, it's slowly changing. And in my personal opinion, unfortunately, is that in the US, normally there's seasons. So you have your baseball season, you have your soccer season, you have your basketball season, your football season. So it allows players to play as many sports, hopefully, as they can, which I think is for the betterment of the child because it allows you to see different things. It allows you to have better coordination, so on and so forth. We don't have to go about all the social attributes. But a lot of times in other countries, the season goes way longer. I can use Switzerland as an example because this is the country where I grew up. Your basketball season, and this is starting at 11, 12 years old, goes from September to May or September to June. So, okay, at that age, maybe the frequency of practices is less per week. So it still allows you maybe to do another practice, but there's a price to pay. You know, we haven't even talked about the financial part of it as well. I don't think it's the way to go. So one of the things that I've loved the most about youth sports in America is that it's season-based. And that's something I think a lot of countries should try to replicate.
Yeah, no, I'm such a big proponent of that. And even looking back in my, my own athletic career, that's something that I always wish I got involved in more. And it wasn't because my parents, they were all for it. I just really enjoyed baseball. And that's what, I will say though, I was a pretty good eighth grade volleyball player. So no big deal.
Got to throw that one in there. Got to throw it in there.
Played 1 year, but again, to that point, in all seriousness, I would have loved to play in high school, but boys volleyball was the same time in the spring as baseball. And I'm like, I'm not going to play volleyball over baseball. That B is back. And so it's just really interesting when it comes to, those different types of seasons like that. Now I want to go back in time a little bit. You mentioned growing up in Switzerland. Can you kind of walk me into a bit of how you got into this field? Touch a little bit on how you got involved in basketball, and then we'll jump a little bit ahead into kind of coming out of college and in what direction you wanted to go in before you got to this point. So what was your first interaction with basketball?
Of course. So my father is from Chicago, specifically Robbins, and was a professional basketball player. And he finished his career in Switzerland. So that was my first touch with basketball. So from birth, so my mother's from Zimbabwe. So really grew up a global citizen, even though they met in Switzerland. And that's the reason why I was born there. But from birth and growing up, my father was still playing till I was 6 years old. So there's pictures of me at 6 months old with a basketball in my hand. So my first experience with basketball, I don't even remember it because this happened before I could crawl. So really, when they say from the womb, me, it really was from the womb, but not forced. You know, for me, it was just a natural passion that came to me, obviously from my father initially, and then it just continued. And grew up playing the game, grew up loving the game, and then the opportunity arose. Well, I always had it in mind. I always wanted to go to the US. I always wanted to go to the US, go to the university in US, and try to play college basketball, because of I mean, I'm American, so it's not like by na nationality, because from my father, I do have a US passport. But growing up, watching all the movies, having family that's over there, I mean, that's what everyone wants to do. They want to just go experience the college lifestyle. So I was able to go 2 years prior to college. I did a year of high school, and then I did a year of prep school before going to Lynn University.
That's awesome. It's fun. The rare, straight out of the womb kind of stories is that's a unique one there. But you can actually say, you always have the basketball in the hand. So that's fun.
There's pictures to prove it, man. There's
Exactly,
pictures to
exactly.
prove
They always say
it.
picker didn't happen. You got the backup to show it. So kind of going through your time at Lynn, you were playing as well. what was kind of the goal? Were you always looking to get into something with basketball? Was that something that you're like, hey, I got an interest, you know, if something pops up, you know, in terms of a career wise after, you know, how did you kind of, you know, begin to work towards what you're doing now, as you were coming up through school and then getting into graduation?
Of course. So initially, so this is when I first went to Lynn, I wanted to continue playing basketball. But I think when you're a freshman, a lot of times you don't, some do, obviously, and kudos to them, but you don't really know yet what you want to do, or at least that there's a big probability that that might change, let's just say. But for me, and even though I was always a good student, I wanted to play ball. I think I got a rude awakening playing college basketball. I was, you know, not part of the rotation any of the 4 years that I was at Lynn. But my last 2 years, I was a captain of the team. I was very involved in other aspects, and we can get into that afterwards. But I think that made me realize, okay, I need to think about something else. But the love of the game never faltered. You know, it's the reason why I stayed. It's the reason why I had opportunities, you know, to maybe transfer, go do this, go do that. I loved my experience at Lynn. There was nothing better. And even more so than that, I loved the game of basketball. So it was then the thought, okay, well, in which way can I stay in the sport, which I was not very knowledgeable at the time. You know, okay, I knew about the NBA. I knew kind of about FIBA. I knew what it was, but I didn't really know what they did. And that's when I started to research a little bit more, have a better understanding of what other potential professional jobs could be inserted, you know, using the game of basketball as a tool. And that went along throughout my time at Lynn. As I said, at the same time, I wasn't just a basketball player. I was also a resident assistant, which I think really helped me. As much as I loved all my brothers, all my teammates, but to not spend 100% of the time with them, as we athletes love to do, whether we have practice or in the cafeteria or whatever it might be, it allowed me to see a different part of the school, have different friends that have different interests, and truly understand even the global outlook of Lynn University, which sometimes if I would have just stayed in my niche of the basketball team, I don't think I would have been able to acknowledge and to experience. And that definitely helped me with my personal development as well.
No, that's so funny that you say, because I was an RA too, my last 2 years. And that was the biggest thing, like being a resident assistant gave me, was just a group outside of baseball. And it was like, I could go 4 for 4, hit 4 home runs. I could go 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. They could care this much, you know? And I like that, you know, about it is like, oh, Ben, you had a game today. Awesome. And that was it. That was the end of the discussion, you know? And that was really, really cool. And that became so important for me. You know, which I think is awesome that you mentioned. And one thing that you touched on too here, which I thought was really cool, is saying, all right, you know, you weren't, you know, necessarily part of the rotation, you know, all the time, but you became a captain. And so that speaks to, you know, how you had to earn that. And that goes from your involvement on the court, off the court, everything like that. So can you kind of touch on what you think? Well, I guess more so your approach, you know, to the game and to your team, that allowed you to, you know, kind of be put in that position. Because I think a lot of people see, especially in the athletic world, is like, all right, well, if I'm not starting every day, if I'm not a stud, you know, then what do I have to give to the team? What do I have to give as a teammate, you know, sometimes? So can you kind of touch on that a little bit in terms of what allowed you to still, you know, give so much to your team, give so much to the community, the, you know, basketball, and be a good teammate, regardless of how frequently or infrequently you were playing or starting?
Of course. I think it could have been easy to just say, you know, screw it and either quit, you know, and just live life as a regular college student, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not what I wanted to do. You know, I love the game and I love to compete. And I love to win, or even more so hate to lose. And, you know, the brotherhood that we were able to create, we had a change of coaches within my 4 years, you know, loved my time the first 2 years with Coach McMillan. And then Coach Price came in my junior year, who's still the current coach at Lynn University. And we had a a great bond, you know, from the moment that he arrived and he, you know, named myself and my fellow brother, Aaron Harrison, as the co-captains. Aaron was the best player on the team, and I wasn't playing. So I think it created the great balance, you know, amongst the two. And I just saw myself almost as a liaison. Even though I was a hooper, I'm a player, but I was almost like a liaison between the coaches and the players. And I was always very direct with anyone, whether it's Aaron, you know, or any player down the line. You know, they knew that I was going to bring it every day in practice. And if they didn't bring it, I was going to embarrass them. I didn't care if I was playing or not. Like, I was coming with it. And even off the court, we're going to have our fun. We're going to do what we do. But let's just remember why we're here, you know, and trying to help all of my teammates on and off the court. And, you know, I truly think personally I was a big part of our success, especially our senior year, where we made the Sweet 16 back in 2015.
No, I love that. So how is that kind of mentality? Because I think that's something that does you don't you you keep, you know, is it within you? You just from this conversation, I could tell, you know, it's still within you. You know, how has that kind of mentality translated into, you know, the work that you do now in terms of, you know, looking to get the most out of people, looking to get the most out of yourself as well? How have you seen that kind of translate?
Quite a bit. And, you know, it's, I don't want to sound cliche here when people talk about all the attributes that you learn on the court and how can they be used in a professional workforce, but it's really true what they say. And I really approach every day in the workforce like I'm still playing basketball. And for me, this came for me from my family. I mean, I came from a father that's, you don't get more basketball than my dad. I mean, if growing up, if we were in a rush in the house and we were walking around, he would say, if you were down 10, you're going to be walking the ball up the court with 2 minutes to go. So, like,
all the analogies. This came,
you know, from way back. You're like, and you think about it, you're like, nah, I'll be running the ball up the court. Yeah. You know, so everything I do now, even if I don't express it publicly or externally, internally, I'm always making some type of connection to the game or connection to the sport of basketball. And that's the way that I try to manage my team, you know, find different wins in the day, even though we're not talking about an actual basketball game, but if it's a project, if it's a milestone, if it's an action plan, ticking that off, those little wins, it's what keeps my competitive juices going, you know, and it allows me to wake up ready to go, attack the day and try to continue to make change. And it's the same way that I manage the team in terms of being direct, straight up, and not trying to do anything behind the back. Or, you know, that's the same way that I was as a captain or a point guard on the court is the same way that I try to manage my current team.
The only time we go behind the back is when we're making passes, right?
Exactly, exactly.
The only time.
No secrets behind the back.
Exactly.
No.
No, that's awesome, man. So there's, I mean, we could be going for days here, but I kind of want to look a little bit into the future, you know, because you always, you know, from what you've been mentioning, you always have different projects going on. So can you kind of touch on, you know, some of the big projects that you guys are working on in the coming days, weeks, months, years, and some of the things that you're hoping to accomplish, you know, personally and professionally in those coming days, weeks, months, and years?
Of course. You know, one of the things that we're trying to do within the foundation is increase our, let's say decrease our financial dependency on FIBA. So that's increasing revenue into the foundation, you know, bringing more money in for our social projects. And that's, you know, trying to find different grants. We just had our first ever gala auction dinner. You know, where we had a silent auction component as well as a live auction component. That was the night prior to the final of the World Cup. So all basketball stakeholders were there, whether we're talking about FIBA, NBA executives, our ambassadors, Carmelo Anthony, Pau Gasol, Luis Scola, women's ambassador Sue Bird, you know, so those type of people, you know, so that they know what we're doing and can follow us and be a part of our journey as we move forward, you know. So that's more on the financial aspect to really try to enlarge our financial avenues and, you know, have more revenue coming into the foundation. On the Basketball for Good side, there's a lot coming up, but in a good way. You know, if there was one that I would have to mention is our youth leadership type of projects. So that for us are young individuals, young change makers underneath the age of 30. We work with federations around the world to identify normally two youth leaders, one male, one female, and we work with them, empower them, mentor them to create their respective Basketball for Good projects in their own country, in their own community. Again, using the power of basketball to create change and helping them understand what is the societal issue in their country. So is that childhood obesity? Is that gender violence? Is that environmental sustainability? Okay, what is it? And okay, how can basketball be used as a tool to tackle that problem that you've identified in your country? And that's something that we're truly starting to see grow. We're building this web and this community of youth leaders, young change makers across the world. And it's really helping us to increase our reach globally instead of, okay, we have 30 projects in however so many countries. Okay, well, no, now we have footprint, we have ambassadors in over 170 countries around the world, all going in the same direction of, yes, developing the sport of basketball, but at the same time, trying to create change as well.
I love it. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So as we're coming to the end of the show here, this is always bittersweet for me because the show's coming to an end, but I know you got one more piece of advice and it's time to cash out. So leave us with your most valuable piece of advice, lesson learned, biggest tip you got for us today. So what do you have for us today, TJ?
I'll try to not be cliche again. You know, I think a lot of times we hear how small of a world the sports world is, which is very true. We hear how important it is to network. We hear how important it is to work hard. And all of those could not be truer, you know. But for me, it goes a step beyond that. You know, it's doing a little bit more research. So if someone is trying or if someone is attending a conference or an event or a World Cup or whatever it might be, trying to see, okay, who is going to be there or who might be there? What is their organization or what is, if they're an entrepreneur, what are they currently doing? What did they recently do? Finding a little bit more about those projects, so having, you know, things to talk about if you're able to meet that person. Try to figure out what are the challenges that that person is facing. And if you can research some potential solutions before you meet that person, it creates more conversation and it allows you to differentiate yourself because there's hundreds, thousands, millions of people that want the same job that we all want. And again, that goes back to how small the sports community world is. So there's not that many jobs out there. And I don't say that to decrease anyone's wish or goal, but that just means that you have to work smarter a lot of times instead of just working harder. You have to work hard, but you have to work smart at the same time, which will help you to differentiate yourself and that one person can remember you by then when you follow that up, that meeting, with an email or a LinkedIn message or whatever it might be, instead of just blind sending messages where there's a very, very low probability of getting a response.
It's that preparation you mentioned. That preparation is key there.
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, you know, I don't know how many interviews I've done and they haven't even read our articles or our last article, like let alone 10 articles ago. So I was like, okay, well, you know, out of our last 5 projects, which one is your favorite? You know, like, yeah. I mean, you know, for me, that's the bare minimum, you know, right. So preparation is key. And that allows you to have any type of luck you might have in the future. But if you're going to meet someone, you have to be prepared.
No, I love it. I love it. TJ, man, it's been awesome. I've had, you know, just the best time getting to talk with you here about just the, I know we're just scratching the surface with all the things you got going on, but you know, this has been an awesome time. So I can't thank you enough for coming on today.
No, likewise, Ben. Again, it was an honor. It was a pleasure. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks to you for all that you do. and looking forward to staying in contact and to looking at all the future episodes that you have upcoming.